Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Today on Keeping the Faith, we're going to be talking about a primary school in Tanzania, Africa, for primary age kids with disabilities. And we're talking by phone with three folks who recently visited that primary school from Illinois. First of all, Reverend Amy Pagliarella. Did I say your last name right, Amy?
You sure did, Steve.
Well, Shoemaker is not easy to say either, but good to have you here. Now, you were the coordinator for this trip, is that correct?
A colleague of mine, Corey Nelson, and I were the coordinators.
You did that together. Also on the line with us is David Tolmie and Jim Mayhall. David, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can, Steve. Thank you.
And what about you, Jim?
Yes, I can. Good afternoon, Steve.
Great. Three folks all by phone today on Keeping the Faith. Let's start off with you, Amy. How did this trip come about?
Well, Dave Tolmie and his family were part of founding the Faraja School, and I think their enthusiasm and over the years, the stories that they've told and the work that they've done to help us get to know Faraja have led people like Corey, my colleague, to go and visit and decide that we wanted to just take more people from the church to give more people the chance to build some relationships with the kids and the people at the Faraja School.
Now, Dave, your parents first went to Tanzania and got excited about this project. When was that?
That was about 12 or 13 years ago.
And tell us a little bit about your folks. I read about them on your wonderful website, and I might spell Faraja. That's F-A-R-A-J-A. And farajaschool.org is a great website with a wonderful video, and it tells about your parents. But tell our listeners about them.
Sure. Well, my mom and dad visited Tanzania I said about 13 or 14 years ago. They were close to 70 years old at the time, in retirement with a group from the Lutheran Church, and they visited Tanzania really very much as tourists. Tanzania has many Lutherans there. It was a German colony at one point, and so it was through some relationships that they joined a small church group just to see what was going on there, and it didn't take them very long to be grabbed by the needs of physically disabled children. My mother's mother, Mabel Swanson, whose name is on the front of the school, taught physically and mentally disabled children her whole career in Rock Island, Illinois. And because of their sensitivity to that need, they asked a question about what can be done to help these young people. The answer was, well, there is no primary school for physically disabled children in the country of Tanzania.
And physically disabled students do not get mainstreamed in Tanzania schools.
No, physically disabled children in Tanzania and in many parts of the third world are viewed very much as outcasts, poor reflections on the family, and really have a very, very difficult life. And that's the condition that they saw and that we've all seen some of these handicapped young people dealing with in Tanzania. So that gave rise to a question, have you ever thought about building a school? And the members of the Lutheran Church in Tanzania said, yes, we have a set of architectural plans, and we've been waiting for somebody to come to make that happen. And it seemed like the call was issued, and the call was answered by my mom and dad, other members of our family, and then many friends, including our friends at First Presbyterian Church of Lake Forest that helped make this happen over the last 10 or 12 years.
And your parents, Don and Joanne, told me their Lutheran church is in Norfolk, Virginia, right?
That's right.
The First Lutheran Church there. Yeah. And that church stepped up with them to help fund this quite extensive school. It has how many children in it? I know it started with 16 12
yes.
years ago, but now it's up to how high?
So the school's reached full enrollment of 86 students.
Wow.
In addition to that, we have approximately 30 students who have already graduated and who are in secondary school, and then another 20 students or so who are in vocational training, learning a specific trade.
Jim Mayhall, you're the chair of the mission committee or co-moderator of the mission committee in your local congregation. How did you folks get interested in this Faraja school?
Well, the mission committee at First Pres in Lake Forest supports a number of local, national, and international organizations, and Dave and his wife presented the Faraja School to the mission committee a number of years ago, and we have been funding it for the last several years, and we have enjoyed the relationship, and we had an opportunity to go visit them and interpret that mission back to our congregation.
Is this the first group from your congregation, other than Dave and his family, who've actually gone to Tanzania to see the school?
Yes, it is. Corey Nelson, whom Amy mentioned earlier, had been before, but this is the first group of members of the congregation.
How many went?
There were a total of 10 of us, including Amy and Corey.
It's not cheap to go to Tanzania and back. How was it paid for?
Everybody paid their own way.
All volunteers.
That's correct.
I want to say again the name of the school and how people can find out more about it online. Faraja, F-A-R-A-J-A, farajaschool.org. We'll get you to their very good website. If you'd like to make a contribution, of course, that's up to listeners. But it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that I've learned about just a lot this last week. I heard about it first from Mike Conklin, who is a professor at DePaul who teaches journalism there. And he went along on your trip, and he's written about your experiences for local papers and sent me copies, which I was delighted to read and happy to invite all you folks to be on the radio. Mike wasn't able to be on the phones with us because he's traveling clear out in the West, but I do thank him for setting all this up and being the producer for this program today. Who else went besides Mike?
Amy, you want to
talk
about the group?
Yeah, so we had a really diverse group of people, which was wonderful. We started with a 10-year-old, William, the youngest member of our group, and his mom, ranging through the people who you're meeting here, including a woman named Rita, who's been traveled all over the world with Presbyterian women, and a woman named Molly, who actually has a prosthetic leg herself. And Molly being in her 70s or 80s and having had the experience of living with a prosthetic leg for about the last 10 to 12 years was just a real inspiration to the kids. So the chance to meet such a diverse group of people from our country and the chance for us to go and build these relationships and experience the school firsthand was just invaluable.
In one of the articles that Mike Conklin wrote, he highlighted the first time this member from your congregation who has a prosthetic leg, she'd lost a leg to cancer about 12 years ago, and the first time she walked up and met some of the kids in their wheelchairs and their on their crutches and pulled up her pants leg and showed that here she is at 81, able to get clear across the world to be walking through Tanzania and seeing them and meeting them, and they were just so pleasantly surprised, just amazed, really.
They really were, because you would not look at Molly and describe her as a person with a disability in any way. You just see this vibrant, high-energy, exciting woman, and she stood up in front of all the kids and showed them this and showed them how she has just been traveling around the world and working so extensively, and she has not let this stand in her way. So it was amazing for all of us.
Now, here at the University of Illinois, where this program is broadcast from WILL, this university has a long history of working with students, college students, who come with various challenges, physical challenges, and has an extensive program to welcome them and help them and support them as they get their college education and advanced degrees, PhDs, and so forth. And I couldn't help but when I was looking at the wonderful video on the Farajaschool.org website, seeing that now some of your students have gotten up into high school, and I was thinking when they finish, some of them might be able to come to the University of Illinois, perhaps, because the support here is wonderful for people with physical handicaps.
Well, Steve, we actually have our first class of graduating secondary students coming up at the end of 2012. And what happens with those students now, post-graduation from secondary school, is going to be an interesting next step. A couple of these students are really outstanding intellects, and we think that they're going to be trailblazers for the physically disabled young adults in Tanzania. We don't know yet what the exact plans will be. We really hadn't intended to fund each student that ever goes through Faraja Primary School to also go through secondary school and or vocational training and or university, but we're working hard with individual donors to help make that happen. So this we're kind of experiencing it as we go along. It's also been interesting in secondary schools how there's been a great willingness on the part of the secondary schools to make accommodations for handicap accessibility. There just aren't the ADA-type regulations in countries like Tanzania. And as was pointed out in the video that's on our website, the impact on the students at the secondary schools who aren't physically disabled, the awareness of the physically disabled children and their integration into that group has really been a positive benefit, not just for our Faraja students, but for the rest of the students at secondary school. And I'm sure the same thing will be seen at university when we do have students get there.
And Dave, I noticed when I was reading about your parents at the on their Augustana alumni bulletin description of them helping start this school, getting the vision for this school, they mentioned that your dad went to the University of Illinois Law School here.
Yes.
So he knows this campus and knows how accessible it is, perhaps. Even back in the 50s, they were already working on this. I'm not trying to just persuade all of the students to come here, but it certainly is a wonderful place and has been helpful to many students with physical disabilities from around the world and for many decades. But getting back to your trip and what you found when you went to Tanzania, let's see. Dave, you've been there the most because your family has been involved with this for the 12 years.
Right.
Tell listeners who may not know where in Africa Tanzania is and a little bit about the country in general.
Sure. Well, Tanzania is in East Africa. It's directly below Kenya, which is a better-known country. Mount Kilimanjaro straddles Kenya and Tanzania, and in fact, the airport that we fly into in Tanzania is called KIA, like Kilimanjaro Airport, and the airport initials are JRO, like Kilimanjaro. So you'll find many people who want to come and hike Kilimanjaro or subsequently go on safari flying into that airport. Tanzania has about 30 million residents. It's one of the five poorest countries in the world, but it's been politically stable, in part because it's so poor, but when the country received its independence in the early 1960s, there was a very forward-thinking, yet somewhat socialist president, Joseph Nyerere, who was very, very keen on having a unified populace. Everyone spoke the same language, Kiswahili. They were taught that. Education was emphasized, and Tanzania's had one of the highest literacy rates in Africa, despite its poverty. And there's an intermarriage of tribal people and many countries, for example, Kenya, and you see this in other parts of the world, are divided by tribes. That's not as much the case in Tanzania, although there's ancestry in tribes today. People live in a somewhat homogenous society. Unemployment is frighteningly high. It's almost impossible to measure. It's at least 60%. Of those who do have income, 80% of those receive income from agriculture, either from the raising of crops, livestock, but this would be a one-acre piece of ground that they're trying to eke out a living on with a corn or maize production or owning a handful of goats. There's very little industry, very little large farming or manufacturing or production.
And the land just isn't very suitable for farming, really.
No, it's not. There are parts of it that are not too bad, but dry seasons seem to be getting worse and worse, and it seems like every time we're there, they're in a drought. So It's a fairly arid climate. It's mixed. There is some agriculture, corn, bananas, coffee, but it's a country that is full of faith. It's a country that has about 30 to 35% Christian population, another 35% or so that's Muslim, and the balance are tribal religions. So while you'll find many African countries are 90+% Muslim, the Christian population in Tanzania is much higher than you'd find in most African countries.
And how do the Christians and Muslims get along in Tanzania?
Well, there doesn't seem to be too much difference as we meet people. I mean, we're certainly involved with the Lutheran Church there. The Catholics are also fairly prevalent. But there certainly doesn't seem to be any discrimination back and forth either way between Christians and Muslims, or even differentiation. At the school, we have children of all faiths, and we're totally blind to what faith people are. But it is a loving and God-based environment in which the children are educated, in which they live there at the school.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our guest and to give the phone numbers for listeners who might like to make a comment or ask a question. The phone numbers here, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois listening area code 217, you may call us at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you're listening long distance, including on the internet, and of course this program is heard anywhere people have internet access, you may call us at toll-free if you're within the continental U.S. at 1-800-222-9455. So if it's long distance, there's a toll-free number, 800-222-WILL, 9455. We're talking with some folks who recently, just before Christmas last fall, went to Tanzania to see the Faraja School, F-A-R-A-J-A School. There's a Facebook site, by the way, the Faraja Primary School will get you onto their Facebook site, but you can also find them online at farajaschool.org. We're talking with the youth minister at Lake Forest Presbyterian Church, Reverend Amy Pagliarella. And we're talking with David Tolmie, whose parents helped start this school, and also Jim Mayhall, who's the co-moderator of the church's mission committee. And incidentally, here on Keeping the Faith, we're having a sort of a little series on local congregation and their missions. Next week, we'll be talking with Nancy Brandt from St. Paul's United Church of Christ in Chicago. And so she's also very active on that congregation. But let's get back to talking about the school. Now, out of all these children, at what age do they start? Do they start at kindergarten age?
Yeah, Jim, you want to talk about that?
Sure. The the kids start from kindergarten up through, is it 7th or 8th grade, Dave?
Yes, level 7 or 7th grade, yeah.
And because of the circumstances in Tanzania, you may have a student who is in first grade that is 9 or 10 years old. So it's all varying ages in each of the classes as they prepare them to graduate from the primary school.
Give us a picture, Jim, of what you saw when you first arrived at the school. What were the children doing, and what kind of disabilities were just obvious?
Oh, great question. When we first got there, after a fairly long travel day, the kids were lining up to go in for lunch. And there were children sitting in wheelchairs. There were children on crutches. There were children with various legs missing, arms missing, some birth defects. And as we approached them, just to say hello, they were all smiling. They were all very welcoming. And we immediately felt just blessed to be there, to be talking with them and sharing with them. So it was not as intimidating as originally expected. It was a lot more fun. The children were very welcoming and a very loving environment for them.
And you had a child who traveled along with you. He and his mother were there. That was a 10-year-old?
Yep. Young William was quite the hit as he spoke with the kids. And he also was able to show them his eye touch, which was quite a hit as he was showing them various games and showing them pictures. So it was a lot of fun for William to interact with the kids and for them to get to know another youngster from America.
Now, you were also taking pictures, videos, and so forth with a portable device. Tell us how you used it.
I took my iPad initially just to entertain myself on the long flights to and from Tanzania. And at our first morning stop, we had worship service with a Maasai tribe. And as we approached, and all these children were coming from various directions, I quick pulled my iPad out, figuring that they would like to see some of the applications on it. So it was taking pictures and showing the kids and a couple of other games on the iPad. So it was quite the novelty for them. So it was a lot of fun to break the ice. And while I can't speak much Swahili, some of the pictures and games we played created quite a nice little communication with the kids.
And I understand when you later traveled, you took some videos of some of the kids in the school back for their parents to see, and who were too poor to travel to even see their kids for months at a time.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. There's a brother and sister, Alex and Fausta, and Corey Nelson and our congregation sponsors Fausta for her annual schooling. And we took a video of Alex and Fausta saying hello to their mom and dad. And then later that week, we went out to visit Alex and Fausta's parents and brothers and sisters. And we showed them the video. And then we were able to take another video of Fausta's dad giving them a message. And I simply made a CD off of that and sent it for Alex and Fausta to see. Now, again, Alex and Fausta's dad spoke in Swahili. But I was pretty sure that he was saying, Alex and Fausta, you behave. It was pretty universal.
And might I suggest that after this program is archived, you might send a copy to that corporation that you've mentioned now four times. It's very wealthy, and maybe they'll send some of these kids to college.
Good idea. Thank you.
Let's go back and talk to Amy. As a pastor, Had you ever thought when you were in seminary that you would end up going on a trip like this to Tanzania?
I can't say that I did. It was really, for me, just a dream come true, because one of the things that I love about the church and the Presbyterian Church is just the way in which we approach mission, and that we don't assume that we are the ones coming in with all of the answers or that we are the ones who have everything to give. We look for chances to be partners, and we look for places where there are people on the ground, people of faith who are doing exciting and powerful examples of God's work, and where we can go in and work alongside them. And so this, you know, I would say that I took away so much from the kids that for me, their witness was powerful and inspiring, and to be able to go and to see that was really life-changing.
Now, working with the North Shore Chicago Congregation Youth, these are kids of privilege, by and large, I presume. And what kind of messages have you brought back for them from this trip?
Well, we've been sharing the Faraja story with the children in Lake Forest for a few years now, and so this was really a chance to just make it come to life a little bit more. And I think the messages that I try to share are similar to what I experienced for myself, which is when we go to interact with people like Alex and Fausta or Samson and Eleanor and any of the kids there, we go because God calls us to be there, and we go because they're children of God just like we are children of God. And so I try to have the children here, you know, focus on that message. A lot of times the messages that kids receive are, you know, we're so lucky, other people are not so lucky, and so we need to go and help them. And I think that's a very well-intentioned message, but it's not always a very helpful message. I think it's more helpful for children to understand that we're all children of God, we all can inspire each other. And so how do we go and build relationships and friendships? And so knowing that I can't bring all of the kids from Lake Forest to Tanzania, I try to bring some of those messages and stories back to them.
And the kids in your congregation in Lake Forest, Lake Bluff, when they see, I presume, some of the videos of these kids in Tanzania who are playing soccer on crutches and running around in wheelchairs, playing dodgeball, what were their reactions?
Well, they were pretty amazed. And one of the things that we did is we made a scrapbook with pictures of our kids, and we had the kids answer a couple questions about themselves. What subject do you like in school? What sports do you like? And then when we were at Faraja, we took pictures, we took video, and we had the kids answer the same questions. And so we brought those back, and we continue to tell those stories to our kids to show here's a child in Tanzania who likes soccer just like you like soccer, and here are some pictures of these kids who may be missing a limb, and here we are watching them play this really heated game of soccer, and many of them are really good, and so it can really be inspiring for us to see how these children are faithful and cheerful and smiling and helping each other and supporting each other in the ways that we can also learn from their experiences.
Do you have children of your own?
I do. I have two little boys.
How old?
Almost 3 and 5.
So you're around kids 24/7, I guess is the expression.
I am, yes.
Now, when the kids in your congregation, over the years, they've been exposed to the kids at the Faraja School, you know, I'm so old, I remember people having pen pals. Do they do that anymore?
Not precisely, because in some ways the communication has gotten easier. In some ways it's hard to get messages through. But we have done, when we've had people going to Tanzania, for example, a few years ago, there was a graduating class, and so our kids made graduation cards for the children there, and we sent those over. And so the hope is that we'll have groups of people going on a somewhat regular basis, and we can continue to send communications and tell stories and send pictures and bring things back and forth to each other.
We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this afternoon with our three guests who went last fall to the Faraja School in Tanzania, a school for physically disabled children, one of only two in that large nation that's helping to educate kids with these kind of physical disabilities. We'll be getting back to them in a moment, but let me take just a minute to let listeners know what's coming up on future programs. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith, and coming up next week, as I mentioned earlier, is Nancy Brandt. Her topic is The Devil's Brew, Wealth, Power, and Inequality. She'll be talking particularly about the state of Illinois, but of course it has the facts about this state are echoed many places throughout this country. That's January 15. On January 22, 2012, our guest will be Rabbi Rogerio Kukeman. I had to stop and think about how to pronounce his name, too. He's from Brazil. He's in his first year as the director of the Cohen Center for Jewish Student Life here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Rabbi Kukeman will be our guest on January 22nd. January 29, Mark Braverman, who will be giving several talks here at the University of Illinois on campus and in the community about Jewish and Palestinian relations, will be our guest by phone before his visit later in February. Professor William Berkson will be our guest on February 5th, talking about the Jewish sages on psychology. Professor Berkson is the author of a recent, very well-reviewed book, Pirkei Avot, Wisdom from the Jewish Sages. And Professor Jay Wilcoxon will be our guest on February 12th on Keeping the Faith, talking about several new study Bibles that have come out in recent years. He'll be giving us some thumbnail reviews of those, so people who are interested in having a up-to-date study Bible might want to listen. On February 12th, Professor Jay Wilcoxon. Well, let's get back to our guest today. We're talking about the Faraja School in Tanzania. And let me repeat the phone numbers for listeners, 333-9455. Eager to have folks call with a comment or question. That's a local number. If you're calling long distance, 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, that includes listeners on the Internet who are listening at will.illinois.edu/AM. And if you missed part of this program and would like to hear it later at your convenience via computer or via various other devices, you can do that by going to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith and just leave the G off of keeping, and you'll be able to find this program at your convenience. Let's talk a bit more with Dave. How many times have you been to Tanzania? Can you count them?
I think it's been about a dozen times, although my parents have been there more than twice that many times. I've got a day job that keeps me busy too, but they're there. Over the last few years, they've been there three or four times a year, and I try to get there twice a year.
And what's your business?
I'm a partner in a private equity firm here in Chicago.
And do you use vacation time to do this, or are they friendly to your doing this extracurricular work?
Well, you know, it's a great group of partners that I have at my firm, and one of the partners is actually a donor sponsoring the cost of 3 students at the Faraja School, and one is sponsoring the cost of 4 students at the Faraja School because he has 4 children of his own. So even when I get over to Tanzania, though, I'm still on the cell phone and my BlackBerry back and forth to keep business moving here. So it all kind of flows together.
How's the cell reception in this part of Tanzania?
I have to tell you, it's ironic because the cell reception is better there than it is when I drive in on the Eden.
The Eden Expressway in Chicago.
Yes. But cell phones are very, very popular in Tanzania. People who can hardly afford clothing are spending a lot of money on cell phones. So it's a universal product, that's for sure.
Yeah. And Jim, what do you do in your non-church life?
I have a small software company in the telehealth industry.
And did you have to use vacation time to take this trip?
Yes, I did. But since I had to just ask myself and my partner, I was able to get extra time.
Are you married?
I am.
And what did your spouse think of you taking vacation time by yourself?
Well, when she realized where we were going and what we were doing, she was all for it.
And Amy, your spouse?
Yes, my husband thought it was an opportunity of a lifetime. He was very supportive.
Has he ever traveled to Africa?
No, he hasn't.
How long will it be till you make him go?
Well, some of the children at the Faraja School said I need to come back again soon and bring my children so that they can meet them. So we hope to. We've actually chosen to sponsor a child there, and my hope is that when that child graduates a number of years from now, I'll be able to bring my whole family to be a part of that.
When you were traveling around the school, Amy, you met other pastors. You participated in one baptism. Tell us about that.
That was so powerful. As a few other people have alluded to, that there are so many faithful Christians in Tanzania and people who really just live their faith so powerfully. And so to be a part of a Maasai worship service where you have just dozens of beautiful voices coming together. You have people dancing forward to make their contributions. You have just these people who are so filled with the Spirit. And they brought 6 babies forward for us to baptize, which was a little bit humbling and a little bit awe-inspiring and just very, very joyful that Corey and I were able to come forward. And even though we don't speak the same language and we didn't understand a great deal of what was happening in the worship service, we just felt that the Spirit was there and that we were able to be a part of these new babies being welcomed into the Christian family.
Now, this school is sponsored by the Lutheran Church. The Lutheran pastor there is the headmaster. Now, did I understand he's a bishop?
No, the bishop has been very involved in the planning for the school.
Okay.
But the pastor is pastors serve many roles there, teachers, heads of school, that kind of thing. So we have a pastor who's been the head of the school since inception.
And so where do the kids go for their Muslim worship or Christian worship?
Well, the kids, transportation is very difficult there. And so when they're home, which would be a four-week break in the summer and 3 weeks or so over what would be a Christmas vacation time period, they may go with their families to worship at that time. But there are worship services at the school. There are daily devotions. It's a really powerful thing to participate in, particularly the daily devotions with just the children when they're at the dining hall. And much of that revolves around praying for their family, praying for their friends at the school who may be sick. And that certainly isn't denominational. It's God-focused, and everyone worships in their own way, but it's a very, very intense and beautiful worship methodology there.
Now, the educational accomplishments of these first 15 graduates that happened recently, the ones that are in high school now, secondary school, is really remarkable, and it was in the top 5% of all the kids in school in all of Tanzania, I read. How rigorous is the school day for them? You mentioned just now how long they're in school over the year, but how long are they actually studying each day?
Right. Well,
these are primary
I'm glad you
kids.
Asked about the academic program, because I you brought up a good point about the success rate of the education. First of all, it's a residential school. So students are there, it's like a boarding school, where they're there taking classes, and the curriculum is the government-approved standard primary school curriculum. So it very much follows all of the courses that would be taken in any primary school in Tanzania. But then in addition, there's extra training in the area of computer skills and English language.
Extra training for computer skills, particularly because that's very helpful to kids with physical challenges.
Very much. That's a great point, as well as English. And so the students are in class typically from 8:30 in the morning, you know, with a lunch break, until about 2:30 in the afternoon or 3. During that day, they will have physical therapy. We have a full-time occupational therapist and have had part-time physical therapists as well, working with the students to improve their physical conditioning. And then they have a recreation period that is part of what you saw in the video in terms of the kids playing soccer and that kind of thing. It's really, really terrific. They're doing homework later in the afternoon. They have dinner together, and then they're also frequently doing homework into the evening. So it's not unlike students here in America. But as you mentioned, Steve, the first class of graduates, which was actually in 2008 was our first graduating class, and we really weren't sure how they would stack up to the other primary schools in Tanzania. So all of the graduating students, as they prepared for graduation, took the standardized test that's given to all students in Tanzania as they finish level second or primary school. And within the district, the collective scores of the students at Faraja were in the top 5%. It was actually about 3% in the third percentile. And then the second graduating class in 2010 scored in the top 2%. So we're very, very proud of the hard work that the children and the teachers have put in, and then it enables them to move on to secondary school. So they all qualified to go on to secondary school.
Now, the secondary school that these kids are going to is a Catholic school.
Yes, there are children both in the Catholic schools, the church-run schools. We also have some children in the government-run schools.
Both, okay.
Some of both.
All right, and how are they doing?
They're doing fairly well. The schools, the private schools, are much better than the public schools over there. The private schools are much more expensive than the public schools over there. And so for those students that were able to get into private schools, they do very well. The students that are in the public schools is a little bit more hit and miss because they don't get the same kind of attention they get at Faraja. So we have some students that are top students and others that we found are really going to do better in vocational training. So some of the students have been redirected to a vocational training center, which is designed for physically disabled young adults, where they can learn a trade which would be compatible with their physical limitations. but it may be carpentry, it may be seamstressing, it may be electrical work, it may be auto repair. So there are a broad number of things that people can do. Most of the employment is self-employment, and small businesses can be started with these kinds of skills.
We have a caller waiting on line number one. Let's go to that call. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Hi. I applaud the efforts, and I think it's a wonderful thing for groups to do this. But I wanted to broaden the discussion a bit. Africa is such a huge continent, but there are some specific incidents in Tanzania that I think are worthy of note, and that's there was a gold mining company, Barrick Gold, that George Herbert Walker Bush was on the board of for a while. There was a sort of a government takeover of what had been an open pit, sort of hard scrabble open pit gold mine, and there were actually miners buried alive in this incident. It went to court and got to be very celebrated, particularly in the English press. It's not much known about here. I don't know whether the longer term observer of Tanzania have their knows of this story. I know of it because of a American reporter in the BBC, and he's also doing great work on what they call vulture funds. We don't hear them talked about much, but these are basically the kind of cutthroat hedge fund types of groups that are buying up African bonds and extracting much more than was intended out of these. It's a complicated monetary and financial phenomenon, but and I can't explain it too well right at this point.
That's
but
all right. Could you tell us the name of the reporter you mentioned?
Oh, his name is Greg Pallast, and he has a new book that has vulture funds in the title, I think. And
how's the last name spelled?
Pallast.
Thanks.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate the comment. Any knowledge of that, folks? Dave, you've been there the most.
No, I will say that, as the caller said, it's a complicated situation. I think it's fair to say it's a complicated world. And boy, we get lots of questions about why aren't you committing yourselves to needs here in the United States, or why don't you build more schools? And my mom and dad, since the inception, have provided, I think, the vision which says, let's stay focused on the need. And the need, if you're there, just hits you upside the head, which is the desperate situation that faces physically disabled young people. And basically what we endeavor to do, with help from a lot of people, including First Presbyterian Church, is to give these children an opportunity to live a life of meaning, of happiness, of self-esteem. We don't want them to live in a secured environment with just other physically disabled children. We want them to go back to their communities. We're trying hard to prepare them to do it. And in fact, some aren't healthy enough physically to ever be able to do that. And we've had a couple of children, students that have passed away while at the school just because of their illness. But as my dad has so eloquently said, even for those that will never be able to live on their own, they at least have 7 years in a special place where they're loved and where they're happy and where they're close to God. And so while there are many other challenges in Tanzania and other countries around the world, whether it's buried miners or vulture funds, the people over there that we deal with are good people who don't have very many opportunities. And when given opportunities, a very, very high percentage of those turn them into success and contribution for the benefit of themselves, their families, their communities. So we feel very fulfilled with the work that we're doing, despite what is a complicated country and a complicated world.
Jim Mayhall, as a co-moderator of your congregation's mission committee, tell us a little bit about how that works. Who volunteers to be on that, and how much money do you deal with a year, and how do you settle fights over where it should go?
Sure. We have, over the last several years, organized the mission committee to focus on the three key areas that are basically very important to the church historically. And those three areas are education and relief and development and evangelism. And we organize the various agencies that we support across those three distinctions locally, nationally, and internationally. And so locally here we have a relationship, partnership with a school in North Chicago. And internationally we've got a relationship with a school in Tanzania. So we look at opportunities that are presented to the church typically by members of the church that are involved in a particular organization for analysis and then ultimately deciding on what organizations will support. Our mission budget is approximately $500,000 a year, and so we are able to donate $500,000 to agencies both near and far of all different stripes and shapes and colors.
And when there are disagreements, Dave comes to you and says, hey, there's a school in Tanzania, I'm not sure which is the correct pronunciation, but and someone else comes and says, yeah, but what about over there in Malawi? It's also one of the five poorest countries in the world. How do you decide?
Well, we have each of the areas of our mission, education, relief and development, and evangelism, are subcommittees, and each subcommittee is allocated a portion of the funds, and that subcommittee is responsible for making decisions regarding the funding of each of the agencies for the current year and decisions for adding or deleting any agencies from the previous year. And so the subcommittees bring their funding recommendations to the full mission committee, and we vote to approve their funding. And so if there's any disappointment or disagreement, it's all handled at the subcommittee level. And in the final analysis, I think everybody's happy with the fact that some $500,000 is donated and lives are touched both near and far.
And it's often hard when you're funding people in developing countries to get good, dependable financial information so that people know that the money they donate is actually going to where they hope it goes. What kind of checks and balances have you found helpful?
Well, the Faraja School is a perfect example. Dave, as a member of the congregation, was able to approach us. Since there's that relationship to begin with, it makes it very easy to do the analysis to make the decision. So we're pretty careful on the organizations that we would get involved with from an international perspective, that and so we make sure that we have some kind of relationship with that organization through the church. Because, yes, it can be very dicey sometimes.
And, our role at the school, when I say our role, we have a board. We have a foundation that's been established, the Faraja Fund Foundation, which is a tax-exempt nonprofit private organization that I chair, that both is responsible for fundraising as well as just for support of the school in terms of some business skills as well, including budgeting and financial review.
And so as a 501c3 U.S. nonprofit organization, you have to file forms and make public the finances.
Exactly. But from that standpoint, the bigger concern, and it's a good concern, is particularly in third world countries, is the money being used for the intended purpose.
Sure.
And meaning that the foundation in particular, my dad and my mom and myself spend a lot of time, in fact, a couple hours even today, reviewing budgets from a distance, reviewing budgets on our visits over there, expenditures, controlling those expenditures, controlling the money. And not that we don't trust the people we're working with, but there are so many needs that money, even despite good intentions, can be misdirected. And so we want to be able to say to our donors, most of whom are personal friends, like my friends and church members at First Presbyterian, that we know where this money's going and we can assure them that it's being put to the intended use. It takes a lot of work, but we're in a position to be able to do it.
We're down to our last 6 or 7 minutes on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. Let me give the phone numbers one last time. Keep your questions or comments short, but happy to have you call 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. And let me again thank Mike Conklin, a professor at DePaul in the journalism department there, for putting me in touch with these folks who went along with him on this trip to Tanzania to the Faraja School. More information is at farajaschool.org. Let's talk a little bit about the staff there. How many people work with these 80-some kids with these disabilities?
Well, I'll take that. We have a teaching staff of about 9 teachers. We have a physical therapist who's also an occupational therapist. We have an administrative staff of 3 people, an executive director, a treasurer, and then an administrator. We have 2 matrons and patrons. These are people, young adults, who live with the students almost like a dorm mother or father. And with some of these students, just the physical moving and helping of the students can take a lot of work. It's been a great story to watch some of these patrons who have helped the young boys and the matrons help the young girls. They've also become the song leaders, and the school has developed a song and dance group that's actually entertained other congregations in the area, and it's just fabulous. So people take on a broad range of roles. We share the facility with the Diaconic Training Center that's also run by the Lutheran Church. And the Diaconic Training Center has a dining hall, which we now run. So there are 6 people who cook there. All of the children are responsible for cleaning the dishes and clearing the tables, that kind of thing. And then we also have a farm that we just started in early 2011 that has 5 full-time employees and then day laborers. And the farm is starting to become income-producing as well as providing corn, beans, milk from cows that we have, and we just purchased some chickens, and those chickens are going to start laying eggs in April, and we'll be producing eggs for the school's food and eggs for income as well. So overall, there are over 30 people that are employed by the school, both in teaching, physical and medical needs, and the care and operation of the school and the farm.
And Dave, this question is for you too, probably. Of the 80-some kids, are all of them there free, or can some of their parents perhaps pay some or all of their costs?
We ask the parents to pay, and some do pay a part of it, but it's about $1,000 a year on average. We say $1,200, including the typical cost for medical care. And in a country where the per capita annual income is around $200, $200 to $300, that's just beyond the reach of almost everybody who's at the school. But we do have some families who participate. We also have parents who come visit their students at the school, and some who come to graduation. And when they get to graduation and look at their child, typically they're bigger families, 4 or 5 children or more in the family, and there's one that's physically disabled, and they come and look at that physically disabled child stand up in front of the graduation audience and receive their diploma. It's just a miracle.
Now, the $1,200, that pays for to be at the school, to live there, also for food?
That's right. Room, board, teachers, as well as an average amount for medical.
So if someone wanted to sponsor a child at that school, $1,200 would do it for a whole year?
Yes, we've set up a program where individuals can sponsor the cost of a student at Faraja School for $1,200, and then the school supplies the name of the student, and then we pass that along to the donor, and then the donor can correspond with the school. So as Amy was saying, correspondence is a growing part of our program, back and forth with emails, letters, that kind of thing. So we're really grateful to the individuals who have sponsored students that have been assigned by the school, and we now have We now have sponsors for slightly over half the students, but that is an area that we're looking for, and we have information about that sponsorship opportunity on our website.
FarajaSchool.org. Pastor Amy, tell us about how you were received as a female pastor in this country.
Definitely not the norm there, but I think that was just even more powerful for me. Every time I was introduced somewhere, I loved watching Dave's mom, Joanne, just turn to me and say, look at all of the women. They can't take their eyes off you. It was not something that was familiar to them, despite the fact that women in Tanzania are hardworking, faithful parts of the church and are leaders in many ways. Just a woman pastor was something still a little bit out of the ordinary.
Now, there's more than one woman pastor at the Lake Forest Presbyterian Church right now.
Yes, our head of staff is a woman.
How long has she been there?
She went there with Dave last year.
She went to Faraja first, actually, before Corey did. So Pastor Christine Shikoyan went over with me a couple of years ago, and then Corey followed her, and now Amy's been there as well. And she's been there, 7 years at first?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How does this affect your opportunities when you preach as to what you say from the pulpit? This kind of experience, Amy?
Well, it just is a real living example of God's kingdom on earth, to be able to share the stories of the children who in that community and in that culture would be last, and in the world of the Faraja School, they are first, and that's exactly what God is trying to bring about.
We're down to our last 30 seconds. Any one of you want to have a closing remark?
Well, this is Dave Tolmie, and I'd like to say that we're really grateful for the many, many individuals, friends, family members, congregations that have supported the work of the Faraja School. And as we say, we're happy to have the opportunity to share the story of Faraja. And if this is a story that resonates and an opportunity, we would encourage follow-up. But we really find it's an opportunity to get people to think about others in need, and we hope this can prompt others to find their own calling in that regard.
Thank you very much. And if listeners would like to learn more, of course, go to the website that was mentioned already, or you may contact the First Presbyterian Church of Lake Forest, Illinois. FarajaSchool.org also has contact information and ways to make contributions if people would like. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. Next week, I'll be talking with Nancy Brandt about the Devil's Brew, Wealth, Power, and Inequality. The following week, January 22nd, 2012, the director of the Cohen Center for Jewish Student Life at the University of Illinois, Rabbi Rogerio Kukeman, will be our guest. January 29th, Mark Braverman will be talking about Jewish-Palestinian Israeli relations, January 29th, February 5th. Professor William Berkson will be talking about the Jewish sages on psychology. And February 12th, Professor J. Wilcoxon will be talking about current study Bibles. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host. You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and Religion, Rethinking Animal Intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Always wanted to visit Cuba? Well, now you can. Explore the cultural and historic treasures of Cuba with WILL. Enjoy a 9-day journey beginning May 13, 2012. We'll depart from central Illinois, flying into Miami and on to Trinidad and Havana. Space is limited to 30, and the deadline to register is February 1st. For more information, call 217-333.